Crime Stories with Nancy Grace.
A modern day Bonnie and Clyde? What does that mean? Bonnie and Clyde have been greatly romanticized. Yes, I've seen the movie. I loved it. But that was a movie. Have you ever been to a murder scene? Because it's nothing like in the movies or on TV. First of all, it's shocking. Many people step onto a murder scene and immediately vomit or back out. The smell is overwhelming. It's like nothing I've ever known in my life. And people's bodies are just left where they're murdered, sometimes staring off into space, sometimes with their eyes closed, sometimes can't make out what their face even looks like. It's nothing like movies. So when I hear modern day Bonnie and Clyde, I'm talking about at least 5 dead victims that we know of.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace.
It's not romantic. And it's not the stuff of Hollywood and movies and the AMC and the popcorn. It's gruesome and it's real. And I want justice. They can hide behind their moniker, Bonnie and Clyde. But what they really are serial murderers. I'm Nancy Grace. This is Crime Stories. Thank you for being with us here at Fox Nation and Sirius XM 111. Listen to this.
Bigger reward being offered right now for new information in 2 heinous murders now connected by forensics. Whoever shot these 2 to death in separate parts of the St. Louis County community is still on the streets. Crime Stoppers is elevating the reward from $15,000 to $30,000.
Investigators are hoping this gets them clues and an arrest fast. Saturday night, just before 11, Barbara Goodkin was shot and killed in University City. Less than an hour later, someone shot Dr. Sergei Zakharov to death in Brentwood.
And police say this silver vehicle caught by multiple surveillance cameras may have been involved in both shootings.
A silver vehicle. Look, there's no coincidence in criminal law. A silver vehicle appearing in or near a crime scene, that is no coincidence. And at the get-go, that's the only thing we've got. A glimpse of a silver vehicle and 2 dead bodies. Now, you heard Brentwood, and I think I heard Universal City. Can I tell you something? Those are 2 of the poshest areas in this country. So why would these 2 seemingly unconnected people be murdered? And the only thing linking them, a silver vehicle. You were just hearing Samantha Jones and Corey Stark speaking. Let me introduce to you an all-star panel trying to make sense of what we know about the so-called modern-day Bonnie and Clyde. And this is no Faye Dunaway and, I guess, Warren Beatty. No. With me, you know them well, Daryl Cohen, former felony prosecutor, now renowned defense attorney in the Atlanta jurisdiction and really across the country. You can find him at ccallaw.com. Dr. Jory Crozen, police psychologist, Faculty St. Leo University, research consultant, Blue Wall Institute, author, Operation SOS. Dr. Priya Banerjee, board-certified forensic pathologist at anchorforensicpathology.com consulting, assistant medical examiner, Rhode Island. Lenny DePaul, former chief inspector, commander, U.S. Marshals. Reporter Christy O'Connor with WBTV News Charlotte, WBTV.com. Christy, this is quite the ball of yarn. What a mess. But we know it all starts with the murders of these seemingly unconnected people. But take a listen to our friends at KMOV4.
Khorbatov says Zakharov spent part of the weekend in Miami looking for a home to retire in. He says his flight got in late Saturday and he Ubered to Bonefish Grill for dinner. Khorbatov says he was shot while waiting to Uber back to his house in Town and Country.
Very shocking. I've never had a friend become a victim of street gun violence.
Authorities believe this crime is connected to the death of Barbara Goodkin in University City. The Parkway School District says she was a substitute teacher from 1992 to 2006. The owner of Palmano's restaurant in Chesterfield says she and her husband were regulars and adored by their staff. Tonight, Khrabatov is struggling to make sense of the two seemingly random but connected killings, all while mourning the death of his friend who never fully lived out the American dream.
That was his plans for the future that never came to fruition.
Which reminds me, Christy O'Connor, that every case we cover and investigate, how very, very real the victims are. They're not part of some Hollywood movie script where some guy sitting in a leather swivel chair looking out down on LA dreaming up a plot. These are real people. Did you hear that? This one guy works his whole life. Now he's finally looking for a retirement home. He goes to Bonefish, waiting on an Uber. He's shot dead. Just right there. The only thing connecting these people, that silver vehicle. Christy O'Connor, reporter, anchor, WBTV, Charlotte. Let's just start at the beginning. Where did these crimes happen? And who are the first two victims that we know of?
Yeah, well, these two crimes happened just an hour apart from each other, not far from each other, in a suburb of St. Louis, Missouri. And that's, you nailed it on the head. It's kind of how we all connect to these, because they were simply doing something on the weekend like we all do. Barbara Goodkin and her husband were just riding in their SUV when they were both shot, and miraculously her husband survived because he had a cell phone in his chest pocket that stopped the bullet from killing him. He kept driving to the hospital, and unfortunately his wife did die from her injuries. Then just an hour later, a completely unrelated person to that couple, Dr. Sergei Zakharov, was waiting for an Uber outside of a restaurant, and he was shot and killed. Both appeared to be robberies, and unfortunately, there were two victims who lost their lives because of it.
Well, did you say the man and the woman, the husband and wife, were in a vehicle when they were shot?
Yes.
Now, that's a very, very different MO. To you, Daryl Cohen, former prosecutor, at that time, in the same courthouse where I prosecuted, Fulton County Courthouse in inner city Atlanta, as prosecutors, we often look for similar transactions. Now, under our framework of law, a person's past crimes cannot come into evidence unless and until the state proves a similar transaction, a fingerprint crime that goes to course of conduct, motive, frame of mind. Here, there is a very big difference of shooting someone standing outside a business versus a couple in their car. But you really can't ignore all three are shooting victims 1 hour apart in time and very close in proximity. I think that would qualify as a similar transaction. My point, I think it's the same shooter.
I think it's absolutely the same shooter, Nancy. But I'm troubled by how are the two people, how was this couple robbed if they were in their car and he was fortunate enough to have the bullet hit his cell phone? So that bothers me. I agree. I think they're the same shooter, but there's more to it than what we are getting initially. I'm just troubled by it.
Yeah, you know, he's right. I was a little perplexed when you said that, Christy O'Connor, that the couple driving along, and can you imagine that? I mean, this never happens, Lenny DePaul. The wife is gunned down in the car, and the husband is shot. This is like the stuff of movies, but he's got a cell phone in his shirt pocket, and it deflects the bullet. That's like never happens, Lenny.
No, it doesn't. But you know what? For law enforcement, this is a nightmare. I mean, you're chasing ghosts at this point. Got shots fired. Sadly, she succumbed to her injuries. He survived. Apparently, the bullet did hit the cell phone and fragmented enough where He was able to get out of there. But for law enforcement, it's now let's put this puzzle together. Let's connect the dots.
Man, and of course, it's at night. It's after dinner time, which everything happens, it seems like, in the dark, which adds a whole nother layer. Nobody can see anything. Nobody knows anything. You don't get the tag number.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace.
We're talking about one thing in University City. Now, it is what they call an inner ring suburb of St. Louis in St. Louis County. And the population, only 35,000 people last census. Now, what the point of that, and let me go to you, Dr. Jory Crossam, psychologist, faculty, St. Leo University, is that you expect, and this is a stereotype, which of course isn't always true, for crime to be lower in a smaller area, but you've got the St. Louis connection, Dr. Jory.
Yeah, and I would be looking at the reason, the why, because now you're trying to get a connection, of course, law enforcement is, but also they're looking for a motivation. Robbery appears to be it because both of them were robbed. But again, now you start breaking down into behavior. Exactly, you know, how did they confront them? How were they robbed? What did they get? Money, credit cards, those types of things you'd be looking at.
And Christy, you said that the motive was robbery. How do we know the motive of shooting inside a car at a couple minding their own business is robbery?
Well, we're going based on what we were given from law enforcement officers and how that all transpired. Don't know all the
I see. So, you know, maybe it was an instance, Daryl Cohen, of them trying to rip open the car and get in there, and they couldn't, and they shot. But at the get-go, police are calling it a foiled robbery attempt.
Correct.
I take them at their word. But do you agree or disagree, Daryl?
I just don't like it. I need to know more. I mean, was it foiled robbery? Was it attempted murder?
Okay, well, I don't have more right now. And that's something we have to accept in police investigations, Daryl. Every time you read a police report, I always said, well, wait a minute. Something's missing. I always have other questions, but that's what we know at this juncture. And I'm saying that with 1 hour between the two crimes, all three of the shootings with a handgun and only a very short distance apart, it's got to be the same person. I don't really even care why. The only reason I wonder why is because motive could lead me to the killer. Now, I want you to hear a little bit more about what we know about this victim. These victims, are they in any way connected to the so-called modern-day Bonnie and Clyde? That's certainly putting perfume on a pig. Take a listen to this.
Police say someone shot and killed Barbara Goodkin while she was riding in her car with her husband down Del Mar in U City. Goodkin's husband also shot in his chest.
She's always was very pleasant, very nice customer, and we chat all the time.
Barbara was a longtime customer at Luba's tailoring shop in University City.
I disbelieve it can happen in our community, and right here on Del Mar where my shop is, and to me it's just devastating.
Police say less than an hour later, Dr. Sergei Zakharov, a well-known anesthesiologist, was shot and killed in the parking lot between Bonefish Grill and the Drury Inn in Brentwood.
Sergei was a wonderful person, very talented, very nice doctor, very nice person, very nice singer.
Luba Bushtaber says she and Zakharov were dear friends. She says Zakharov enjoyed singing and performing at social events in St. Louis's Russian community.
It's very sad to find out what happened to Sergei. He will be missed in Russian community.
Three victims shot. Let me go to you, Dr. Priya Banerjee, forensic pathologist, assistant medical examiner. Dr. Priya, how is it? Did the cell phone work like a vest, a police vest because he was damaged, but he didn't die.
Yeah, I mean, this is the most fortuitous thing this guy could have hoped for, right? I mean, that cell phone paid off by saving his life. I think, you know, that's a good question or a good example. But, you know, it is basically protecting his most vital organ, like his heart, potentially his lungs. And I'm just curious which cell phone it was. Did it have a special case on it? Because, I mean, still, usually a bullet can penetrate, you know, metal. It can go through walls, glass without, you know, and still penetrate the body. So,
right.
I'm curious.
Yeah, and that's a common myth about, for instance, bulletproof glass.
Right.
It doesn't completely stop the bullet. It just deflects the bullet, and the bullet doesn't hit the target. With a bulletproof vest, you still get hurt, but you don't die. So I guess it performed the same function. Take a listen to Robert Townsend, KSDK.
A heartbroken Luba Buchstaber cannot believe on Saturday two people whom she adored were both shot and killed in separate shootings. Police say someone shot and killed Barbara Goodkin. Police say less than an hour later, Dr. Sergei Zakharov was shot and killed in the parking lot. Investigators have linked the two shootings with forensic evidence. They also believe one of the victims was robbed. Meantime, they're still pleading to the public to take a good look at this surveillance video of a car police believe was involved in both deadly shootings. Now, police are asking anyone with any information to call Crime Stoppers. A $30,000 reward is also being offered in these cases.
You know, very often we see loose lips, which sink ships, suddenly get on the phone when a $30,000 reward is put out there. But before that $30,000 reward can have any impact, take a listen to this, our friends at WBTV.
It wasn't normal.
Shamir Hicks knew something was wrong when she hadn't heard from her friend and coworker, 35-year-old Thomas Harden. She and Harden's cousin went to his York home on May 2nd. His car was there, but the back door that he always used was locked. That's when she called police.
We knew something was wrong then, and we both started crying. And I think the police made a comment like, oh my gosh, or something like that when he went in. And we knew then.
You know, I've heard reports of police opening a door to a crime scene and literally stepping back. I don't know if it's what they saw or what they smelled, what they perceived. But as soon as cops opened the door to this home, Thomas Harden, just 35 years old, in York, South Carolina. Now remember, the other in St. Louis. Now we're in South Carolina. They immediately know something's wrong. Now, you are hearing the voice of Christy O'Connor, WBTV, joining us right now. Tell me about Thomas Harden's murder. What do we know, Christy?
Yeah, Nancy, this happened about 2 weeks before the murders in St. Louis. Thomas Harden was found dead inside of his York, South Carolina home at about just before 9 o'clock that night. And the only reason police even went to his house was because his family and friends had not heard from him. Right. And I should mention that Thomas Harden identifies as a woman, but his friends and family tell me that he still went by his given name, Thomas Harden, and he was fine with being referred to as a he.
I'm asking about, frankly, Christy, the sex, the age, the color, the religion. I don't care. What I care about is this person has been murdered. Now I've got three dead bodies and one guy shot, saved by his cell phone. And I want answers. Now my question specifically was, what can you tell me about his murder? What do we know? For instance, was it a rural area? Was it suburban? Was it urban? Did he live on a major street? Did he live near an interstate? Was it a heavily wooded area? Were there surveillance cameras? Was there forced entry? Was the home ransacked? Did anybody else live there? Was he shot? Was he chopped up with a machete? Was he poisoned by slow death? What can you tell me about the murder?
Thomas Harden was believed to be shot, and York is a very rural area. However, he did live within side city limits, so this would be... there were homes nearby. He lives in a residential area. but it didn't appear that there was any forced entry or anything like that. The front door was unlocked. And in fact, police, when they showed up, they knocked on the door and the door opened and he was found laying on the floor near the couch and the front door.
I'm trying to get that visual.
Nancy,
jump in, go.
This is Dr. Banerjee. I go to crime scenes a lot, part of my job, and to lay my expertise when police especially don't understand what's going on. And, you know, to look for these kinds of patterns, you know, if someone does have a different gender preference, you know, do you think it's a hate crime, you know, because the door's unlocked, you know, it wasn't a forced entry necessarily, especially if this seems so disconnected at first. The other thing I want to say is you're all the time looking for clues from the scene plus evidence. So if I'm at a scene, I'm always looking for spent shell casings. You know, I'll tell the police, hey, this person was shot, so we're looking for a weapon. There's no weapon at the scene. And then any casings, bullets recovered from the scene, in any case, could be really important, not only to determine the weapon, but then to connect them across the board.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace.
Okay, Christy O'Connor, you're right.
Yeah.
And so are you, Dr. Priya. Because what I know is that the two are going to be connected by, I believe, ballistics. But
right. You're
right. When you are analyzing a scene, you do have to take into account, was this a hate crime against a transgendered person? You're right. And so I'm glad you told me that, which throws another wrench in the works, another fly in the ointment, because police are going to go down that rabbit hole trying to figure this out. But when you're telling me more of a rural area, no signs of disarray, no forced entry, but the front door was unlocked. You know, Lenny DePaul, former chief inspector, commander, U.S. Marshal Service. What a lot of people don't know is that when you are doing ballistics comparisons, a bullet is like a fingerprint. And I remember when I was first learning this at the crime lab, and Daryl, you and I have been to the crime lab a million times, tracking down scientists and ballistics experts. But I remember the head of ballistics gave me a tutorial, Kelly Fite, and yeah, great, great ballistics guy. I love that guy.
Kelly Fite.
The other day, I went through a roadblock, and guess who was running the roadblock? Kelly Fite's son is now a commander in the police force. Anyway, that aside, a bullet, a gun, when it is created, is made, of course, with hot metal, and it dries a certain way inside the barrel. Like our fingerprints, the inside of each gun is different because it dries differently. So when a bullet is hurtled down the barrel at such a rapid speed, it hits up against those unique markings. They're called striation marks. And when you get a suspected murder weapon, you get the bullet from the body or the scene. You shoot another bullet through that gun. Then you look at the two of them, the bullet out of the body and the test bullet, and if they match striation marks, you've got the murder weapon. That's how that works. Now, leading up to Lenny DePaul, what a lot of people don't know is shell casings, cartridges, also have a unique marking from the ejector pin.
Yep, the fine.
So that's evidence, just like Christy and Dr. Priya were just saying.
Yeah, no, that's for sure, Nancy. You've got to find the shell casings first. But back up a little bit, too, on that perimeter that's set up in the crime scene she was talking about earlier. That widens at that point. Yeah, you might be jumping down that rabbit hole looking for a specific person, or when you're Q&A-ing people, knocking on doors, talking, you know, within the area. Back up, surveillance cameras, who's got security cameras outside. You know, so that whole scene widens at that point when they're chasing this ghost. Yeah, shell casings are important. The body apparently had been shot, so now you got a weapon involved. So there's a lot going on there. That bullet comes out of the end of that barrel at 1,000 feet per second, and the rifling and what's going on inside that barrel and how that round is marked up. is very important for ballistics and to match weapons. So right now, you know, as you know it, we're looking at a couple different homicides in a couple different areas. No one's connecting the dots at this point, but there might be something there.
You just said something that I don't like, and it was chasing a ghost. Not that I disagree with it. I just don't like it because you can't catch them, and they keep killing innocent people. A guy standing outside a Bonefish waiting on an Uber. A man and a woman driving along in their car. This guy in his own home in a rural area with the door closed. Bam, he's dead. And you called it a ghost. And you're right. I still don't like it. But you're right. How do you catch a ghost? Well, I'll tell you how. Take a listen to Alex Giles, WBTV.
Now, the York County coroner has not released the official cause of death for Thomas Harden, although his friends tell me that he was shot. Now, shortly after, just hours after, actually, that York police found Thomas Harden's body, Chester police responded to two separate shootings.
That was Christy O'Connor, WBTV. Now listen to Alex Giles, WBTV.
At a Thursday press conference, police from the Brentwood and University City Police Departments in Missouri displayed these photos of Tyler Terry, Adrian Simpson, and the car they were believed to be traveling in while they were in the St. Louis area. Police say it was Saturday, May 15th, when the suspects stole a license plate from a truck in St. Louis County. Then, around 10:50 p.m., the suspects allegedly shot 70-year-old Barbara Goodkin and her husband, Stanley, while they were riding in a vehicle in the University City portion of St. Louis. Barbara died.
Man, okay, chasing a ghost. Well, apparently that ghost knew what he or she were doing because they stole license plates from a truck, St. Louis County, and were using them on, I guess, that silver vehicle that they were believed to be traveling in the St. Louis area. So let me understand something. Christy O'Connor, is it the vehicle or the tag plate that is identified and, I guess, surveillance video?
According to news outlets in the St. Louis area, police connected those killings by capturing that car, the silver car. That's what they first noticed and started looking into. And then they kept combing through that surveillance footage. And then that led them to a motel where they interviewed people and people described some potential suspects. And then they combed through more surveillance footage and found a photo of a woman. And then they just needed to find who this woman was.
And I bet that was a big surprise. Dr. Jory Crozen, a psychologist, St. Leo Research Consultant, Blue Wall Institute. Dr. Jory, you don't expect a mass shooter, a serial killer, let's call it what it is, to be a woman. So when they get a line on this car, they find out there's a stolen tag attached to it. Then they get surveillance, a video from some motel, and it's a woman. A woman involved? That's almost statistically impossible, Dr. Jory Crozen.
That's correct. You're going to look at her, but you're also going to be looking, okay, maybe this is a team. I mean, I would look to see that the woman...
You know what? I find that a little demeaning, just a little bit, Jory, because you're saying a woman can't pull off a serial killing on her own?
No, she can.
She's got to have a man helping her.
Statistically, they don't do it.
Okay, well, you're right. You got me over a barrel on that. Yes, she could dream it up, but statistically, Daryl Cohen, what's wrong with men? Now I understand why I've been called a man hater, but it's always a man. Why is a man involved in practically every violent felony? Why? Why, Daryl?
Look, Nancy, when you and I were prosecuting, we know that 90% of our violent criminal offenders were men. We as men tend to protect. We as men tend to go out too far. We as men tend to be jerks sometimes. Women are far more close to the vest. And when women kill, it's normally not serial, although we were obviously involved in a, wasn't it testosterone? No, it was a...
Oh, yeah, you're going to blame it on biology? Well, you know, I'll let you go ahead and do that.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace.
To you, Christy O'Connor, reporter, anchor, WBTV, joining us out of Charlotte, North Carolina. Christy, tell me, where did they get the grab of a female? How did they connect up a female?
Well, this woman was identified in surveillance footage.
that they were combing through in the St. Louis area. So that's how they knew a female may have been involved. They just needed to identify who this woman was.
Yeah, she
had what?
Been.
Go ahead.
Yeah, Nancy, it's Lenny. Back up just a little bit with respect to those surveillance cameras and what they picked up on. They got a partial plate at first, and then they continued to look at other security cameras in the area and whatnot. They were able to get a big shot or, you know, a shot of the plate itself. So when they ran it, it did come back stolen. However, the LPRs, the license plate readers, picked up on that plate in a specific area, and that's how they get to, I believe it was North City, is the area, but that's how they get there, right? And then they're knocking on doors, they're talking to people, and then they get people identified inside the car. In fact, they put them in a hotel and said that they were there buying narcotics or something.
Lenny, you know what? You got me drinking out of the fire hydrant here because that's a lot of information. Would you just slow down and say it one more time, please?
Yeah, it's that fugitive investigator part. Pardon me. Go back a little bit. So with respect to the surveillance cameras,
mm-hmm.
They picked up originally on a partial plate, mm-hmm. and they ID'd the vehicles. It was a hatchback, I think Mitsubishi, silver in color. They continued to look at surveillance cameras in the area.
Partial plate, hatchback, Mitsubishi, silver in color. Go ahead.
Yeah, they continued to look at surveillance cameras, security cameras in the area. They were able to get a complete shot of the plate itself. That plate came back stolen from a truck company, I believe, or from a truck.
Right, right.
At that point, the local law enforcement had put that plate into their license plate reader database. It did get picked up on in a specific area. They responded to that area. They started Q&A-ing people, knocking on doors. They were able to establish or come. It came down to people saying, yeah, we know who they are. They're here buying narcotics. In fact, they're staying in this particular hotel. They respond to the hotel and they hit the a jackpot there with respect to surveillance cameras there. They were able to identify the woman, and they thought that was consistent with a possible homicide that had happened in South Carolina. So with her identification, you know, at that point they had people, they had names. You know, you go from 0 to 100 miles an hour as a manhunter, as a fugitive investigator. You now identified that ghost. So you're turning their worlds upside down at that point.
Man, you're good.
Sorry, I'm talking
about. Now I get the whole Commander U.S. Marshal Service thing. Wow. Lenny, I mean, when I'm hearing partial plate and then plate grab, license grab, those are the things you pass a lot of times on the interstate. They're sticking up on it looks like a metal rod and it's a little panel. They're grabbing the information from your tag. And I'm fine with that. A lot of people think it's intrusive. I don't have a problem with that because that's how we're going to catch these killers. Take a listen to Jamel Goss, Hour Cut 8, Fox 46.
The FBI, ATF, and SLED are assisting in the search, and they're reminding people to lock their doors, remove any valuables from your car, and remove firearms from your vehicles. Authorities say Terry is armed and should be considered extremely dangerous. As the search continues, authorities say welfare checks on residents and businesses will continue.
Who is this guy, Tyler Terry, to Ace reporter Christy O'Connor, WBTV? Who is this guy? He's just 26 years old. How could he have done so many horrific things at that young age?
It's a great question. I wish I had the answer for you.
Yeah, and you know what? I deviated. I normally don't say, oh, wow, why would he do that? Who is this guy? Normally, I want to know jurisdiction, perpetrator, facts that can prove a case. But once in a while, I get crazy and want to know, who is this person and why? But what I do know right now is, thanks in a large part to tedious, tedious police work combing through video, license grabbers, bamming on doors. I mean, when you look at video for hours and hours and hours to catch every freeze frame, that is hard work, but they did it. And Christy O'Connor, the one guy, this guy, 26-year-old, Tyler Terry, leads us somewhere else. Take a listen to Hour Cut 13, Marino Boyle.
There is another person facing charges in all of that. This is Adrian Simpson. As you saw her mugshot a moment ago, deputies say Simpson is the one who drove Terry's getaway car in several of the crimes, including the murders in Missouri. Her first court appearance was Tuesday, just hours after she was taken in. Her bond was denied. She is in the Chester County Detention Center right now. She's facing a traffic charge in connection to that chase that started the manhunt Monday. Simpson is also charged with two counts of accessory to felony murder. And now, as we mentioned, the breaking news, she is also charged with murder in the death of her husband.
Oh, man, the plot is thickening. And why would a woman get tangled up with a guy like this? Tyler Terry, listen to our friends at WBTV.
The last 6 days have been tough for Carol DeWitt. She spoke to her daughter, Adrienne Simpson, in a brief phone call from the Chester County Jail.
She told me to tell her kids she loves them. And I asked her, Adrienne, what was you thinking? And she was manipulative.
Police are holding Adrienne Simpson because of her alleged connection to the four murders 26-year-old Tyler Terry is accused of committing. This includes the disappearance and death of her husband, Eugene Simpson. DeWitt tells me her daughter and Eugene have been separated for several years, but remained friends. She says her daughter started dating Tyler Terry in 2018.
It's toxic. He was abusive physically, verbally, mentally.
DeWitt took these photos of Adrienne after she says Terry was arrested for beating her.
She told me she's scared of Tyler. She told me that a couple of times. I said, why do you keep going back? She said, Mom, I love her. She said, maybe he might change. She said, you know, just hang in there.
Okay, I really need a shrink right now. I mean, tell the kids I love them. Seriously? If you love them, why are you the Bonnie, part of a Bonnie and Clyde serial killing machine? If you love your children, I mean, help me out. Dr. Jory Carlson, you're the psychologist. I love them. And so I'm afraid of him. So therefore, I ride as his getaway person and help shoot and kill innocent, unsuspecting victims. That's not fitting together for me.
No, there's so many, you know, different psychological theories you could apply. But with this individual, I mean, what she was telling her mother, you know, I love him and I think I can change him if I hang in there.
Who wants to change him? Just get away from him.
Yeah, but they get connected through this excitement with that domestic violence. And it's different levels of violence where, you know, they experience the violence, then they have this makeup between the two of them, and they're back in love again, and it cycles over and over again. And that can easily, as we see here, I could even conjecture this going out to the murders that they committed. Definitely the male in this, he was the driving orchestrator of this, and you know, she kind of went along, but she played some integral parts in there, you know, especially getting to her husband.
You know what? She's just as guilty as him.
Oh, definitely.
You know, after the first murder, when you realize you're taking someone's life, she had the chance right then to back out. She had a chance before then to back out. But when you say, tell the kids I love them, really? Do you love them enough to go be with them, to work a regular job 9 to 5 every day to support them? Do you love them enough to sacrifice what you want to help them achieve what they want? Much less drag some good-for-nothing man prone to violence around your children? Oh, hell no.
Hey, Nancy.
She didn't love him enough to do that. What? Go ahead. Hey, try to tell me I'm wrong, Cohen.
Hey, Nancy, I'm not telling you wrong. I'm wondering if she didn't orchestrate this whole thing. You know, just because she doesn't
pull
the trigger.
Now I like what you're saying.
Hey,
We've got
the antifreeze deaths here in Atlanta.
Yeah, you're right. And all this time, remember, Daryl Cohen, to buttress what you are saying, they catch her, but she doesn't give him up. He's still on the loose. Take a listen to Jamel, Fox 46.
Efforts have been beefed up in the search for Tyler Terry. More than 100 law enforcement officers are searching for him right now. Choppers have been in the air most of the day while search dogs and law enforcement officers search the woods. Tonight makes almost a week since Terry has been on the run.
Troopers and the sheriff's office have been, you know, really doing a pretty good job trying to find him, but He's really, really elusive.
There's no question that he's determined, but also would call into question what state of mind he's in. Certainly he's tired. We have evidence to believe that he's not well.
To Christy O'Connor, how does this guy keep eluding police?
Yeah, it's a great question. My understanding is that he was living in the woods prior to when they were searching for him. So I think he was familiar with
surviving without a whole lot of amenities. But it still was pretty mind-boggling that it took so long, and law enforcement, there was hundreds of them out
there.
Can
I remind you of somebody, Christy O'Connor, that I know you're going to know the name? Eric Rudolph, the Atlanta Olympic bomber. He lived in the woods for a really long time, and I hate that guy. Not only did he do the Olympic bombing, but he then bombed some abortion clinics. And when my investigator that you know well, Daryl Cohen, my personal investigator that helped me on every case, my partner, went to the scene of one of the bombings. And while they're all standing there, another bomb is timed to go off. And shrapnel actually hit my investigator. This guy, Eric Rudolph, eluded police and lived for years in the wild. And this guy right here, Tyler Terry, is doing the same thing. But you know what? You can run, but you can't hide. Take a listen to our friends, Fox 46, our Cut 16.
Breaking news at noon, Tyler Terry in custody. There he is, Fox 46 exclusive video here of Terry being brought in on the back of a pickup truck within just the past hour and a half in Chester County.
So the sheriff says that basically they were able to secure that perimeter, that they had around the area of Highway 9. And they were able to capture him safely. So take a look. This is Louisville High School right across the street. This is where we've been set up all throughout the afternoon, watching as officers kind of cheered when they were able to bring Tyler Terry in safely.
The officers cheered. And I guess they did, working day and night, 24/7. To catch the Clyde part of the Bonnie and Clyde scenario. And it's just burning me up that they are being romanticized right now as Bonnie and Clyde modern day. Christy O'Connor, how many dead bodies do we know of? Is it five and one nearly dead?
We know that they are charged with four homicides and they are suspects in a fifth homicide out of Memphis, Tennessee.
Memphis,
yes, but they have not formally been charged in that homicide yet. They're just suspected.
And what do we believe was the motive, Christy O'Connor?
It's a good question, because all of the victims don't appear to be related at all, but law enforcement has said that many of the cases were robberies and they used that money to buy drugs. However, some of the cases we know that they had personal connections with, such as Thomas Harden out of York, South Carolina, and Eugene Simpson, Adrian's husband. They do have more personal connections there.
Well, fortunately, the law is the state is not required to prove motive. And that will give something for these two, Tyler Terry and his Bonnie monikered Adrian Simpson, something for them to think about while they twiddle their thumbs behind bars. Nancy Grace, Crime Story, signing off. Goodbye, friend.